We are live with Lisa DePasquale. How you doing?
Good. How about you?
Great. I mean, when was the last time I saw you physically in person?
I think when you were on tour with Gutfeld in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Oh, yeah. The live show with Greg.
Me and Terry showed up. Terry Shepard.
That's right. That's right.
How to Be Tom Shalhoub, a podcast starring me, Tom Shalhoub. Each week, I explore a topic or speak with someone I find interesting, someone I think you could learn from. By listening, you might gain some insight into what it's like to be Tom Shalhoub. Now, why would anybody want to do that? Well, look, you have to model yourself after someone, right? Might as well be me. I mean, who are you going to be, Albert Einstein? Much easier to start with someone simple, like me, Tom Shalhoub.
So, Lisa DePasquale, she is a Red Eye regular, for people who remember Red Eye. And we always used to have a good time there. Where did you live when you were doing Red Eye, and how did you get to the show?
I was in the DC area, and I just took the Acela up. So yeah. Very DC-ite, New York way to travel.
Yeah, you have a lot of people who do that. So some of the things we're going to be talking about today is where you live now, because you were in DC. Let's get your whole story. What were you doing in the DC area?
So I'll start at the beginning.
Yeah.
I moved to DC from Florida in 1999 when I graduated from college. And I worked at a conservative women's group where I basically traveled with conservative women speakers, Michelle Malkin, Ann Coulter, Christina Hoff Summers, those types.
Yep.
And from there, I went on to be the head of CPAC for 5 or 6 years. So I get to take credit for being the only one to have Rush Limbaugh at CPAC, which was like a big highlight of my life to, be able to meet him. And then also I get
call him and invite him.
Pardon?
Did you call Rush and invite him?
Oh, I called Kit Carson. I don't know if you ever knew him.
No.
He was his, producer.
Yeah.
And, I remember the day when I heard back from Kit. Obviously not his real name. He's since passed away. But Kit said, Rush is inclined to attend. And I'm like, putting the words, I'm like, that means yes, right?
And sounds like he wants to, but you're not sure.
Yeah. And so don't get your hopes up just in case. And so the speech is on CPAC, but it was right after Obama won. So everybody was, especially the media, was expecting it to be a very dour, somber CPAC. And I introduced Rush, and he comes on stage and gave this like great hour and a half speech that was basically, like, don't lose hope, and just a great message that conservatives needed to hear, and more importantly took that narrative away from the left of us being, super sad.
yeah. And so that was, I mean, how do you do that? How do you end up becoming the head of CPAC? You were like, you were the head, or you were the head booker, or you,
I was the executive director of CPAC.
Yeah. And,
so, basically since I was at the other group, I was always very helpful with the previous executive directors. So if they needed to get to someone, like over the years, Dr. Laura, Miss America, Ann Coulter, people that I had contacts with, I would just be helpful for being helpful. And when it came time for that position to be open, they both past CPAC directors recommended me to, at the time, it was board chairman David Keene, and I got the job. I was, how old would I have been? 28. So I was the head of CPAC at 28.
Yeah. And so you did that for a while. You're in the DC area. You're
going
for a while and doing Red Eye. And then at some point,
always kind of writing, doing, and I, did a couple books. and columns and stuff on the side. Because, you know, I had wanted to be a writer since I was probably 10.
Yeah. What was your site that we used to plug on Red Eye? You had, was it a Substack or were you writing for Breitbart?
I was probably writing for Breitbart. Right now, I just put everything on my website. Or not put everything up, but I put all the links on my website and I do have a Substack. It's getbright.substack.com. But you know, X is weird. It like, it shadow bans Substack. So it's just like, I'll just put, you know, my website. But I think it was probably whatever I had new at the time. So if it was a book or a podcast, Political Punks podcast, or, you know, whatever was new at the time is probably how I was introduced.
Yeah. When did you get out of D.C. and where are you now?
I moved out of D.C. in 2021, I believe, to Texas, to the middle of nowhere, Texas. I'm in between Austin and Waco. And, you know, there's a ton of people that... from, you know, New York and DC that moved to Austin or Dallas. And I don't get it. Like, why would you move into a blue city? And so I really wanted to move into a red area.
Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously for somebody like Joe Rogan, he goes from LA to Austin.
Yeah. It's still a step up for him.
Right.
Yeah. It's a step up for him still.
But you would say what were the two places you said it's between Austin and the second place you mentioned? I didn't even know.
Oh, Waco.
Yeah.
Waco is mostly known for being like Chip and Joanna Gaines, you know, the fixer upper couple.
Did they buy that whole town and then they redid it?
Pretty much. They have like this compound with like stores and they call it the silos and restaurants and like food trucks and all that. But it was an HGTV channel that just kind of blew up. Now they have their own network, like Magnolia Network. And then that Waco is kind of in between me and Dallas. So I'm like Central Texas.
Yeah. I went to Dallas and Houston to do my show. And the thing is, it's all Texas to me. I don't really understand the whole. And now, of course, I was in Austin with Greg. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know a lot of people say, well, you know, Austin, it's a blue city. You might as well like live in Brooklyn or whatever. But it still did kind of seem like
Texas. No, it's definitely better still.
So why Texas?
Partner and I, he is in Arizona, Brett Smith, who I think you've had on.
Yep, he's not hiding back there. I mean, we can say Brett Smith, right? We can like, you know, I know he's scurried away, but.
Yeah, he's scurried away to go back to making art. And he lived in Arizona and Texas was, you know, kind of a good place. We both wanted to get out of where we were. And then also coincidentally, it was funny because at the time, he had knew some people here in Temple, and I was talking to my mom and my stepdad, and they were looking between Tennessee and Texas, and they're both former military, so that they had their eye on that. And we're actually really close to Fort Hood. And I asked them one day, I was like, "What city were y'all looking at in Texas?" And they're like, "Temple." And I'm like, "That's crazy! Out of all the cities, and especially like small towns." That both of them picked had been looking at this town. And coincidentally, about 2 months earlier, my mom and stepdad moved to a small town near here. So they're about 15 minutes away.
Oh, well, that's good.
Mm-hmm.
And, okay, so this was 2021. So you got there, you got to Texas in the middle of the COVID nonsense.
Yeah, well, and that was a big part of it.
How much was it in Texas, though? I mean, I did some venues. Like, so we, during COVID, Greg and I were touring around, and everyone kept telling us, well, you're in New York, it's bad there, but if you come out here, we're like living our lives. But essentially, you know, I didn't see that because the venues.
Yeah, the venues.
We were doing venues in the Dallas area, and they had the same restrictions as everybody else. So we were doing outdoor drive-ins, and they still had people going around in golf carts trying to get people to put their masks on. Now, in In Texas, they did less of that. They kind of were sitting outside their cars, and they weren't going to wear a mask outside. But when we played Cape Cod, they really enforced the mask. People were sitting outdoors on the beach. It was like an ocean breeze coming in on Cape Cod, and they were enforcing people to wear masks in the parking lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so when I moved here, the only time I was asked to wear a mask that I remember was like the oddest place, and that was at a chiropractor's office. And I'm like, the people don't even believe you're real doctors. Like, why are you the ones enforcing these? And it was just happened to be that guy. But yeah, nowhere else, like a grocery store, you'd still see people wear them sometimes. But and I'm trying to remember if I went to the hospital for an appointment. I think it was like encouraged, you know, on like a sign outside, but you didn't have to. A lot of the doctors did. But any mandate for anyone else didn't exist. And half the time when I went to the chiropractor, I just pretended like I forgot.
Yeah, well, chiropractors, they're a little bit like new agey anyway. So maybe a lot of them were, you know, they're not following all the silliness.
Well, that's how I was surprised, because like my chiropractor in, you know, DC was, you know, one of those types that's like, they're messing with your DNA. So, you know, he wasn't, you know, having a mask mandate. So it was kind of like the last place I expected was at a chiropractor here.
Well, I haven't even found a regular, I kept saying during COVID, I'm going to find a new primary care doctor that doesn't buy into any of this stuff. And, you know, to a certain extent, I like to kind of keep away from the mainstream medical thing, but I had a, you know, my primary care doctor was very into the COVID silliness. And so I was like, I just can't do it anymore. So I'm going to find my own primary care. I still haven't found one. I've got to find a doctor who, you know, speaks my language outside of like Dr. Drew, who, I mean, he's not my doctor, but I talked to him and I joined that company. He has the wellness company.
I was about to say the wellness company, they're a sponsor of Bright. So full disclosure, but they do, I'm not sure if they, it would be great if they had a database for that sort of thing.
I think they do.
They have lots of resources.
But I joined it because, you know, Dr. Drew is part of it. Mm-hmm. And he talked about it, and I wanted to buy some of their vitamins and everything. They have supplements and all that stuff. And they have good deals on some of these other things, and buying ivermectin if you want or things like that. So I joined. And so now I'm a member of it. And they have different
like kinds
of
health.
Medical, and consultations you can do online and stuff like that. But maybe I'll be able to hook up with an actual a physical primary care doctor, you know. Mm-hmm. But so you were you in DC during the first part of COVID?
Yeah, I've been in DC from 1999 until 2021.
Yeah, so that must have been a total nightmare. I mean, I'm sure DC was like the most ridiculous.
Yeah, and I mean, especially at the beginning, you know, when everything just sort of shut down. You know, at the time I had moved within DC, I mean, in Northern Virginia, and like I couldn't get internet installed for several months because they weren't letting people go into other people's houses, you know, to set things up.
Yeah.
And then when it came time for the movers, it was kind of the same deal, you know, to get someone to come and give me an estimate for a move. I mean, it was crazy. And, you know, some grocery stores being closed, and, you know, thank God for Amazon delivery. That's how I got like most of my groceries for the first, couple months.
I just went back to my, StreamYard comments, and I got a viewer saying that there is noise. Are you hearing noise? Fine. I've got my earpiece in here. I only have one side. I don't have a headset on. The audio sounds totally fine to me. What does your audio sound like?
Mine sounds good.
It does?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll proceed. Hmm. We'll proceed with caution. I was just kidding.
Actually, when I just heard quiet, I did hear something in the background.
You hear background noise. Well, let's just kind of go forward. I'm going to go and maybe I'll go listen quickly over to, because we're also live on.
Maybe I'll turn down. Maybe you're hearing. I'm hearing the reverb in my earphones back.
But you have headphones. You're not going out of your speaker, right?
Correct.
So it should be okay. I'm going to listen quickly here to the YouTube feed.
I'm going to take a drink of water.
Okay, it sounds good over on my YouTube feed. Hopefully it'll all be good. If not, I'm going to put this through a little audio magic when I podcast it. Mm-hmm. This is why I like to experiment here with my live streaming.
Smart.
And why I decided to go live today. But if there's any audio problems, hopefully I can run it through the audio soap when I post it to the podcast. Okay, so you're in DC. You're a right wing. Let's go. How did you become right wing? I always love asking people their journey. You know, what made them go right? With Andrew Breitbart, he was a left wing guy in California, and he watched the Clarence Thomas hearings. Mm-hmm. The Clarence Thomas hearings radicalized him. He was so angry over what was going on there. And he said, this is a deep state plot to destroy a man. And that's what made him the right-wing lunatic that he became.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, for me, it kind of started like super early when I was fighting with teachers in high school. And it really surprised a lot of my fellow classmates because, you know, I was a good student and quiet. And no one kind of expected that I would fight with the teachers. And, you know, a lot of times it was like, I remember it was like in social studies and then in like a 11th or senior class where basically you went to a class to learn like businessy type of stuff. And then you got the rest of the day off to go to work. Yeah. And, fighting with the teachers then, and then, and I guess what solidified it probably is during spring break, my senior year, we went to Panama City, Redneck Riviera, and I got a tattoo of the Republican elephant because I was inspired by Kennedy, who has the elephant.
Wait a minute, though. I was saying, like, what made you right wing? Okay, so Andrew Breitbart, it was the Clarence Thomas hearings. For you, you say it's I got a tattoo, but
oh no, it was fighting with the teachers, and then just kind of like learning on my own. Listen, well, this was also back when Rush Limbaugh had his TV show, and I would watch Rush's TV show.
Yeah.
And
What about your parents?
We didn't really. They didn't talk about politics that much. My parents were divorced. They were both former military, but we just didn't talk about politics that much.
But former military, so that's something. They're both former military.
Yeah, they're both like both, you know, conservatives.
They were, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so you had that. You had that kind of foundation. And then you run into, that's usually when in high school you start getting exposed to, ideas and, you know, maybe your teachers or whatever. Of course, I grew up in a conservative home, but I didn't think it was conservative. It was just a regular family. And then in high school, you know, I remember one time they had a student, what do you call them when the students get together? An assembly. Mm-hmm. And it was about nuclear power. So they had one guy from the nuclear industry and he was speaking pro-nuclear power. And then there was an anti-nuclear power guy. And they had a debate. And I remember the students were all cheering for the anti-nuke guy. But the pro-nuke guy was from the industry and he made so much more sense to me. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, okay, maybe I have to go against this dominant thing that I'm getting from my social studies teacher and the, you know, the schools and entertainment, Hollywood, you know, and that's really what started me. Now, it sounds like we're similar. We both grew up in a conservative home, but we weren't really political until they kind of came at us and then it almost forced us to pick a side, right?
Well, and also, like for me, especially in social studies and then in that other class, it wasn't even being forced to take a side. It was the assumption that I was on their side. You know, because I remember one time I got suspended from school. We had to write a letter to the Florida legislature saying why we were against this bill. And I said, well, why would I write? I'm like not against this bill. I'm for this bill. And it was something about school funding and the scholarship, which was tied to this class. Basically, it said that you had to receive a, 2.5 to continue your college scholarship, like semester to semester, but the, or it currently was year to year, but the bill was, I think, to change it to semester. So you had to keep your grades up, and basically you didn't get a free ride for an extra semester if you did really badly.
Yeah.
And I said, well, I'm not against this bill. And it was kind of like, I was called into the office for insubordination and, like, I guess kind of informally suspended. And that day on my way home, leaving school on my way to work, I called a talk radio show. It was like whatever local radio show was after Rush. And I explained this. And I remember saying, like, they're treating us like we're just a bunch of mind numb robots, you know, to write these letters for them. And somebody who's on the school board had been listening and called the principal. And so then the next day, the principal was like, oh, you know, is this true? And the teacher's like, oh, no, it was a misunderstanding. It was just, you know, an exercise in how to write a business letter. And I'm like, yeah, but you told us what to write. And it was funny because in the class, like I said, I was always the quiet student. And it kind of like riled up kids who were like, wait, why is quiet Lisa going against the teacher and getting suspended? Like, what is behind this?
Yeah.
And, you know, it was a red alert.
Now, as you're talking, I'm remembering that, because I'm in this conservative world now, you know, we don't just have Fox News, you have all these other different channels, you've got podcasts, you've got influencers, all this kind of stuff. But back then, in the time that you're talking, outside, you know, and it took, you know, Rush, he wasn't on TV at first, he was only on the radio. The only way you were exposed to conservative thought was talk radio. You had to turn on the AM radio dial. And that's what Andrew Breitbart would do after the Clarence Thomas hearings. He started seeking out opinions. So he would go on to AM radio and he would listen to Dennis Prager. So he lists Prager as a huge influence in forming his, you know, early political rightward shift. Before there was Rush Limbaugh in Boston, I would listen to the local radio hosts. There was a guy named Jerry Williams, who I don't even think we would consider him a conservative, but he was just someone who was always fighting with the establishment. They passed a seatbelt law, and he spent all his time. He had a three-hour radio show. Most of the day, he was just against that seatbelt law, and he got people so angry, they overturned the seatbelt law. And I remember this talk radio guy, like, single-handedly changed the law in Massachusetts. Now, another 10 years later, that I think they put it back, but... Mm-hmm. It was amazing. Jerry Williams. There was another local guy, a name you might know, Gene Burns. Mm. Gene Burns was a Boston radio host. He was a libertarian. And I had never heard of libertarian before. I didn't know what it was. But he would be there with his libertarian thought. And so talk radio was really the only thing we had back then.
Yeah. For but sure. Now, I mean, there were magazines, you know, obviously, like, National Review or Reason or American Spectator, but that's not something young people were, you know, plugged into. And really the book industry hadn't taken off as much as far as conservatives.
Absolutely. You know. You can get published. Mm-hmm. I mean, you'd be like, you know, I mean, maybe you could self-publish, but there weren't any at the big publishers. They didn't have a right-wing division or anything like that.
Yeah. And really the big book that I remember was Rush that I had.
Yeah. So it's hard to overestimate his influence on all of this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, he's all been that's what was so wonderful about having him at CPAC is, you know, he was an influence on my political life. And then, you know, I think maybe around like 2000 or 2001, he read an article I wrote on the radio, and that was kind of like the moment, you know, I thought that was like the high, as good as it gets. And then, you know, to be able to have him at CPAC a kind of thing we can talk about it later in between. He kind of influenced my personal life and, weight loss, and then did it again when he came to CPAC.
Yeah. So, I mean, let's get to it. Let's get to weight loss. That's a huge thing. Give me the number. How much weight did you lose?
Let's see. As of, we'll say this morning, I've lost a little over 166 pounds.
It's unbelievable. That is, Lisa, that's, you know, I weigh 150. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny when I saw Gutfeld, you know, I hadn't lost that much yet, but he had said something like, "You've lost a cat temp."
Yeah.
Maybe a couple.
Now, yeah, you've lost like, you know,
1.5,
like,
maybe.
Like me and a, and, you know, cat temp's cat put together. Peace. But the, so how did you do it? Mm-hmm. When did you start? Like, what was it? What was the process?
Sure. So, you know, I had always been overweight at like, say 3 or 4 on. So I'd always been, you know, a big kid, but I'm petite. I'm short. I'm 5'4". I actually weigh less now than I did in 5th grade. It's kind of the last number that I remember. So, you know, I'm better than my high school body. I'm my 5th grade body. I always kind of just took it as, you know, this is my life. There were times when I would lose, you know, I went to like a fat camp, day camp type of thing in high school and lost a little bit of weight. It always came back.
What was the camp? Do you remember the name of the camp?
No, it wasn't like a go away camp. It was a place where you had to check in every day and they would take your blood and give you like B12 shots.
Okay.
It was like physicians something or other and, you know, eat their food and that kind of thing. Right. That was in high school. And then, I moved to DC and I talk about it in my first book, Finding Mr. Righteous. I attempted to lose weight for a boy. And of course, that didn't last long because the boy didn't last long. And what really killed me is when we broke up, he ended up getting with a girl who was bigger than me. So all that weight came back. Not that I lost, you know, that much, but it actually began with having Rush at CPAC. And when you look at us on the stage, that was when I was at my highest. I was over 300 pounds. And we were both wearing black, you know, very slimming. And we were the same size. And, you know, it was before there was social media, thank God. Actually, I'm not sure if it was before I was on social media, I think. But I just got a ton of emails to the CPAC account, you know, talking about me. And, you know, a lot of times people say, you know, when people say mean things, you just kind of keep it, well, they're wrong. It's like, well, they're not wrong. You know, I am overweight. And
mean though, people were just emailing like,
Yeah, like I'm surprised the stage didn't break with the two of you. And, you know, also on top of that, you know, Rush was known as a big guy. And here I was, like, I wasn't even a big girl. I was the same size as a big guy. And coincidentally, Rush ended up going on a diet that he talked about on the show after that, too. I think both of us were scarred by seeing ourselves, you know, on TV. And, you know, another attempt that I forgot to mention is, I want to say like 2004, I had become friends with his wife, Marta, at the time. And she had said, and I kind of told her about, because she was really into fitness, and I had told her about my struggles. And she said, yeah, Rush has always, you know, had those struggles. If you ever need to know, if you ever reach a plateau and need to know what to do, we'll tell you our secret. And so the day came when I had been at a plateau, you know, in weight loss, which was still a very, you know, small amount. I would say like within the amount I had lost was maybe say 20 pounds. And I emailed her and said, okay, I need to know the secret. And she said, the secret to getting past this plateau is you go to a weight loss resort and spa, and you just have a fantastic time with the, you know, private chefs and just focus on yourself for a week or two and it'll get you back in gear. And I'm thinking, oh great, yes, I'll just go to a private resort. Thank you for the information. And she ended the email with, "To further motivate you, Rush will pay for it." I had never met Rush. I had never met him. And that's what I did. It didn't stick, unfortunately, but you know, it wasn't probably a huge part of his budget, but it was a great experience. I was at a place in Hilton Head, South Carolina, and it was really great, you know, to go and to kind of like focus on myself. But I think more importantly was that there was that outside influence that kind of told me I was worth spending that money and doing it, you know, that it wasn't like this foregone conclusion that I was just, you know, always going to be a big girl. But, you know, like I said, come 2009, you know, I had weighed a lot more than I did then. I would say I gained about 100 pounds. And that's when I looked into surgical options. And I ended up getting the lap band surgery in 2009. And from that, I would say over a year.
What do they do? I mean, I've heard of the surgery and I kind of heard, what do they do?
Yeah, so it's the surgery, I believe Chris Christie had it and Mike Huckabee has had it and Carney Wilson has had it. So they basically put in like an inner tube on your stomach and it kind of, or esophagus, and it kind of, you can fill it up through an injection port. And when you fill it up, it kind of makes it tighter. So it's harder to get, you know, food down your esophagus and it kind of slows down your eating. The problem with it is there's also lots of ways to cheat it. You kind of learn, you know, if you have a milkshake or if you chew chips enough or crackers enough, you know, those are called slider foods. They go down really easily. Whereas maybe say a healthy food like grilled chicken, it doesn't go down and then you up barfing it up, right? So then you tend to stick to the foods that don't cause you to throw up. And those aren't necessarily healthy foods. And they also, if you were to, you know, have soup and things like that, they're not filling, you know? And just over time, it's not been found to be, you know, a good long-term solution.
Yeah.
And I ended up gaining all of the weight back.
And the inner tube thing is still there.
Yeah, it's still there, but you can, like I said, you kind of figure out a way to eat around it, or not eat around it, but like what you can really get down. I mean, and then, you know, you can empty it, fill it, that kind of thing. I mean, mine was pretty full, but I was so adept at, you know, eating the things that I knew I could eat, that it was easy to, you know, put the weight back on. It's more like that initial 80 pounds, like 70 to 80 pounds that came off is just kind of the shock to your system. You know, when you haven't really figured out a way to cheat it yet.
Right. And, but I think two of the people you mentioned, at least, well, Mike Huckabee, and Chris Christie, they gained weight back, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not sure about Mike Huckabee. I mean, Chris Christie, I feel like I can tell. And then Carney Wilson, I think, has talked about doing that. I'm not totally sure she had lap band. She might have had, I think she might have actually had gastric bypass.
Okay. So yeah, that's two things. I think people put those all together. But
yeah,
like gastric bypass is kind of like they make the stomach smaller. Is that kind of the...
Yeah. So in 2018, after, you know, I gained everything back and I went in to get my band filled back up again. And the doctor that I, or the surgeon I had found, basically said he didn't do that anymore, because people just aren't getting the band anymore. And gastric bypass has kind of remained the gold standard. I mean, it's been around since the 70s. And all of this stuff is as useful as you make it, right? I know it's cliche to say that it's a tool, but it really is a tool. Like I said, I've had the same surgery as all those people, among others. And at that point, I made the decision to get gastric bypass. And so in October 2018, I got the big one. And that's where they remove, I think, around 2/3 of your stomach and 2/3 of your small intestines. And that also causes a behavioral change, because when you eat things like sugar or high fat, it gets into your bloodstream faster. And it's got like the worst name possible. Like when the sugar gets into your bloodstream faster, it's called dumping syndrome.
Yeah.
And that just means your heartbeat goes up. And it's just very uncomfortable. It makes you nauseous. And some people push through. I did not like it. And so I avoid those types of foods. I mean, you know, whereas you might be able to have half a cup of ice cream. You know, if I have any ice cream, it's funny, Brett will make me ice cream sometimes at the end of the day. And it's like a normal person's like three bites. And, you know, it's enough to satisfy you and not to, you know, give me that side effect. And so since the gastric bypass, I've lost the 166 pounds. And so now that's been almost, you know, over 5 years. So I think I'm in the clear now, hopefully to keep it off. In addition to, I have a personal trainer, and, you know, do all the other good things.
Yeah. Did you have a personal trainer with the lap band?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, I hadn't really made exercise, that much a part of it. And then I only got the personal trainer, once I moved out here to Texas, and I do it via Zoom. It's a great setup because we have a gym, in our house. It's funny. We basically turned the dining room. It's like a closed off formal dining room. We turned it into a gym. So instead of eating, we use it as a gym. And, my personal trainer happens to be a former boss. So I feel like I can never get away with, you know, even though I'm paying her, I can never get away with like cheating or not doing something because she's always going to be an authority to me.
Yeah. You got to have that status differential, right? Mm-hmm. And it's already there, but, okay. So you had the gastric, bypass and the personal trainer. Do you think, you know, cause from your story, my conclusion is lap band doesn't work. Gastric bypass does. Is that, can I come to that conclusion?
Yeah. I mean, but like I said, there are also some people like, you know, I don't want to pick on celebrities or people in particular, but like Carney Wilson, who, you know, hasn't kept it off as much weight or, you know, has gained weight back after gastric bypass. And there's some, I know two people who have had gastric bypass and who have gained it back.
So Carney Wilson did both. She did the first one. That didn't work out. She did the gastric. That didn't work out.
I think she, but in reverse, I think she might've done gastric bypass first and then lap band.
Yeah.
But the reason I remember she did gastric bypass is because she did it so early. Because after she did it, she was in Playboy after she lost weight. And I bought it because I wanted to see what she looked like.
Yeah. But you can say, it's safe to say that you would be an evangelist for gastric bypass, but not the lap. That's, I mean,
yeah.
All I know is your story. So I'm coming away mm-hmm. with it saying that one doesn't work. This one does.
Yeah. I mean, and part of it is, and there's other things that have since come back, you know, those aren't the only two. There's one called gastric sleeve, where they basically put like a mesh sleeve around your stomach and just like make it skinny.
That one bad. I don't like the word sleeve. That doesn't sound
good. Yeah, I know. Like I have all my original parts. They're just smaller. So they took out the lap band when I got the gastric bypass. Uh-huh. So that was like a quick couple ounces I lost right away. I mean, for me, it's definitely been, it kind of forced a lifestyle change. Although I think, you know, there are days obviously when I, you know, can gain, I think over the last 5 years, there was a period when I did gain, I would say around 15 to 20 pounds, which I've since lost. And part of that, honestly, was when Brett moved here. And, you know, I just was not paying attention as much. I was making us meals every day. I'm a great baker. You know, I'm Italian and Southern. So obviously I'm a good cook and a good baker. And, you know, I was baking more, you know, for him, but also, you know, a taste for me. And, you know, just, and then that's when I hired the personal trainer and start adding more exercise.
So that's the key. I mean, the personal trainer has got to be the key to a lot of this too, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's, people are always saying it's 90% what you put in your mouth and 10% activity. I think it's probably a little skewed, especially as you get older, because for me, I'm not doing a ton of cardio. I'm mostly doing weight training mm-hmm. and it's building that muscle because I'm in my late 40s and you know, I have to build the muscle that I'm losing as I age. And that's just like an overall good thing because it also increases your metabolism, you know, just to be able to burn more calories from having more muscle.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's no magic pill or magic shot. And, you know, there, I just...
What about these shots now? Everybody and their brother is getting shots in their stomach like once a week. It's taken over the world. I can't imagine that it's good. What do you know about this Ozempic thing? We talk about it on Fox all the time because it's just like, you know, everybody claims that everybody's on it. Mm-hmm. But from what I understand, it makes you kind of not like people get sick. They shoot themselves with this. They feel nauseous. Of course, when you feel nauseous, you don't eat. I think that's the secret to the whole thing. It doesn't sound good to me.
Well, it's funny you bring that up. The Ozempic, they're all basically the same thing. The Ozempic is only, I believe, only approved for diabetics. But, you know, some of the famous people, you know, are able to get someone to prescribe it to them. And then there's others like Wegovy and Saxenda and Mounjaro that... Yeah,
anybody can get it now. They're advertising on the subway. It says Wegovy. Once a week, Wegovy, and you just got to go to a website, and then they'll have.
Yeah, I mean those aren't coming from the manufacturer. Those are taking like the semi-glutide compound, and you know they're not necessarily coming from the manufacturer. The reason I know so much about it is because I do take Wegovy.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. So, like I said, when I gain that weight, you know, I talk to my surgeon's office about other options. And she had suggested doing Wegovy. And this was over a year ago. And I started doing the daily injection of the Saxenda. And then probably May of last year, I started Wegovy, which is the once a week. And I fully acknowledge I'm probably in the minority. I had no side effects except for the good ones.
Oh yeah. It doesn't make you nauseous.
No. it just turns off that part in your brain that's always thinking about food and snacking and that sort of thing. You know, sometimes on the first, you know what I think it is? I think the people that are nauseous are probably not listening to the signals. So if I'm eating lunch or dinner and it seems like too much, if I keep eating, I'm going to feel nauseous. If I stop and listen to myself rather than my brain saying this tastes good, then I think I would get the more of the side effects.
Yeah. Oh yeah. So what you're saying is they take it, they ignore the fact that they probably haven't suppressed appetite and they eat anyway. And then they feel nauseous because they probably shouldn't have eaten.
Yeah. And there's also, there's obviously other things. I know someone who had already had, ulcerative colitis and she had a bad side effect. So I think there really are some GI side effects. I've just been, you know, lucky that I haven't had any except for the good ones.
Yeah. Well, that's great. I mean, I love it. I like to hear.
Yeah. Ultimately I don't want to take a shot for the rest of my life. I'm pretty close to probably, you know, stopping that at some point. But, you know, everything is also, you know, a tool. And, you know, part of me saying that is the guilt of people thinking I did like the easy way out or something because I've had surgery and I've had this. And, you know, I just tell myself, I think about how hard it has been. And, you know, it wasn't a habit I had to break after, you know, a couple years, like say after, you know, having kids. It's a cycle I had to break after 40 years of living this way. And, you know, I'm comfortable with, you know, trying with the surgery option. Part of it was, you know, honestly, when I decided on the gastric bypass, I thought about my family and I thought, well, this way they'll know if something happens to me, they'll know I did everything I could. Like it wasn't like a death wish, but I kind of thought I'm doing the ultimate one. If I can't do it from this, then that's it. I mean, I'm like in the clear. I've done as much as I can do. You know, there's been like bumps along the way and, you know, plateaus and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, I feel like this many years out, it's probably my life now, even though, you know, I don't think of that. Like a friend of mine just sent me this shirt since I had had a recent surgery. And I remember seeing that it was a medium and I was like, oh, I feel so bad that she sent me this and it's not going to fit. But it fits. See, Lisa, it fits. Her name's Lisa also.
Well, that's great. I mean, I love to hear it. I mean, it's quite amazing. I can't even, envision it. How long, 160 some odd pounds, and how long was that?
166 pounds since October 2018.
Wow. I mean, it's really something. So anyway, congratulations. I think that's great. And congratulations on your new life. You can tell Brett to come out of hiding. And thanks for being with us today. This was great. I'm in my office.
Thanks for having me.
I had a busy day here at Fox, so I was able to finish up a Fox Nation thing at about 4:15, and then come down here and talk to you. So this was great.
Well, you know, I should note that, you know, for all the crap that Fox gets about, you know, only having Fox babes, I mean, at my heaviest, I've been on Red Eye, I've been on Kennedy, I've been on the Independent.
You were the leg chair, right?
I don't think I always go to the leg chair because at some point
we didn't put you out there at the end.
Well, Joanne was on the, was there.
Well, that's right. We had Joanne. She was kind of the perma.
Yeah. But yeah, I always thought that was super cool that you and Greg both had me on and Kennedy had me on her show, just because I thought because of my looks and, you know, even though I was a writer and an author, I just kind of thought that kind of thing was not an option for me. And so I'm always really grateful that, y'all always, had me on despite that, despite my disability.
No, I mean, it was great. It was great having you on and it will be great in the future. I mean, I got some projects coming up on Fox Nation, so hopefully we'll be doing that again sometime. And if not, we'll do it here on the podcast.
Okay. Yeah. I'll leave my red state and come visit for a little while if needed.
That's great. All right.
I'll bring you a good barbecue or something.
Lisa DePasquale, thanks for talking to us.
Thank you.
All right. I'll see you later. I'm going to hit end stream now. It's really ending.